Well, hey, everybody. It's Joe Stevenson, and I'm here today with a guest, a commercial real estate agent based out of the Phoenix area, Mason Gates. Mason, welcome. Thanks for coming on with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You know, this is kind of a big deal. I want to learn more about commercial real estate. I've done residential my whole career, and you're relatively new to it. I don't want to undersell your experience that you already have in it, but you got yourself off to a pretty quick start in it, didn't you?
Yeah. So unfortunately, I like to look at everything, you know, as a glass half full situation. But I ended up joining, you know, into the commercial real estate world as soon as, you know, interest rates started going up. So I joined, I started interning in the summer of 22. And then immediately, right as I started, that's when interest rates started going up and the market started to, you know, worsen significantly. But because of that, you know, that's kind of when a lot of people start to drop out of the career. And, you know, I get experience pretty much the worst of it and find a way to still, you know, persevere. And at the end of the day, like, that's what's going to make me a better broker long term. So,
you know, it's some of the older agents on the residential side, and it sounds like on the commercial side too, they're kind of half kidding when they tell new agents, hey, you don't want your first couple of deals to be too easy. You don't want to get in the mindset that this is just going to flow easily every time. So so you're out in the Phoenix area, but you do business in multiple states, don't you?
Yeah. So I hit the Midwestern markets. I was born and raised in Kansas City myself. I grew up in the north part of town, Missouri side, kind of by the airport. I work primarily in the Nebraska, Wyoming, Montana, and Dakotas market. And I've started branching out a little bit more into Kansas and Missouri just because, you know, I'm very familiar with the areas and would love to be selling deals, you know, closer to home for me. Those are my main areas of expertise. Nebraska is, you know, an area where I've already pretty much gotten an extremely dominant market share in. So I definitely really like that market and very familiar with a lot of the owners there.
That's great. Now you, even within the commercial realm of real estate, you've developed kind of a niche for yourself in storage units. Is it correct to say self-storage?
Yeah.
Okay. Was that something you kind of found on your own through kind of your own discovery, or did your broker kind of guide you to that as a new agent, or how'd you wind up there?
Yeah. So at my company in particular, which I work at, Matthews Real Estate Investment Services, we're the largest privately held commercial firm in the country. You know, how the whole internship works is you essentially spend, you know, 8 weeks learning the business, getting the best training out there. And through that time, you know, you work with a lot of the senior agents and, you know, kind of land in whatever slot fits you best, whatever mentor you really like to be around. And at which point, you know, you kind of get to make a decision as to what product type you're really interested in. And some shops operate this way. Others are, you know, we do a little bit of everything. But I think there is a lot of value in being a specialist in, you know, one product. And allows you to succeed very early. And so because of the mentorship that I saw and just the opportunities available as far as self-storage goes, I felt that that would be, you know, where I would excel. And, you know, originally I just coming into the internship, I was particularly interested in multifamily because I think, you know, when you think of commercial real estate, multifamily is kind of the gold standard. It's exciting. Yeah. You know, it's like the sexy form of real estate where you've got, you know, you're selling apartments. So I didn't even consider self-storage, but when I heard about, you know, how it's been performing over the last, 10 years, and just the fact that, you know, it was the least foreclosed on property during the great financial crisis, that definitely piqued my interest and made me kind of realize that that was what I wanted to do.
Yeah. That's an interesting statistic there that was least foreclosed on. That says a lot about the stability of that part of the market, that realm of commercial real estate. So when you were getting into it, you know, as you were saying, you know, every commercial agent kind of wants to get into like multifamily, big apartment complexes. I also put maybe office space in that, big buildings all covered with shiny glass. So who wouldn't want to broker a deal on one of those? But do you think the self-storage market in that way is kind of underserved in the commercial real estate world? Or is that another angle you may be thought of when getting into it, looking for where there's a need for good service?
Yeah, I would say so. Especially in the markets that I'm in. I mean, if you're looking at, LA or Phoenix or, really big MSAs, those are obviously already saturated with brokers. But when you look at markets like the Midwest, a little bit more tertiary, the property values go down, but there's still a lot of people out there who aren't getting, quality service, from people who really are experienced in their, product types. And so because of that, I kind of capitalized on that opportunity and, really got a footprint in Nebraska, pretty quickly and, pretty easily by just, again, being valuable, talking with owners, sharing the insight that I'm getting from, other owners and my mentor, et cetera. So that really enabled me to, I think, basically go in there and within just a few months, pretty much start taking over the state.
Yeah. So does it vary much, the transactions you do from state to state? I'm sure it's the same on the commercial side because we have very similar licensing rules, but you probably got to carry a license in each state you do transactions in. But I know on the residential side, there can be some big differences. Like some states you have to close in an attorney's office, some states all agents are considered brokers and, stuff like that. Are there many idiosyncrasies you've had to pick up on in other states or is self-storage pretty much self-storage wherever you go in the U.S. or where you've been so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's just dependent on the state, right? So some are a lot more strict as far as their marketing guidelines go. That's typically the biggest thing. So when we put out property, if I want to have my name, contact information, for the purposes of inbound communication, sometimes I do have to hold a license in that state. Okay. So a few good examples are like Wyoming is strict about it. Nebraska is strict about it. South Dakota is strict about it. And there's a lot of other states as well that are very strict about those. But those out of my market, those are the three main ones that are very strict. I currently hold three active licenses in Wyoming, Nebraska, and Arizona, obviously, just because that's where I reside. But yeah, I mean, I'm working on the South Dakota one. It's just, it's a lot of work, time, money. And so it's one of those things where I basically look at it as an investment and obviously a write-off. But
there you go. But, yeah. Oh, the stuff I write off every year. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right. So it's definitely a little bit frustrating, some of the hoops we have to jump through. But I think, in the long run, it's worth it, especially for some of the deal sizes that we, are bringing out to market. So,
Are there, now I know within the self-storage world, there are some companies that, I guess you'd say are franchises that operate some of these self-storage properties where you would go and rent a unit.
Right.
And are there any difficulties there when you're dealing with companies that are tied to a franchise or anything like that on your end, or is it all the same to you?
Are you talking about like Extra Space, public storage, companies like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Do they put any sort of restrictions on you or, when you have a buyer looking for one, they have to qualify a certain way or they have to be located in a certain place, things like that? Or
I mean, it's very dependent on a number of things. So with regards to Extra Space, public storage, REITs like that, what oftentimes a lot of people don't realize is that, sometimes those facilities aren't actually owned by those companies. A lot of times they're plugged in as management companies and it'll take, 7 to 10% of top line revenue annually. But with that in mind, if and when those owners want to sell, typically we don't have any issues with, you know, those companies. And a lot of times we communicate deals to them and just let them know. I will say their acquisition criteria is typically a lot, you know, more firm and strict compared to, you know, your average buyer. They're typically looking for upwards of above 40,000 net rentable square feet at minimum. And then, you know, all the way up to however much you can find. But like we're working on a 207,000 net rentable square foot deal. It's a portfolio in North Platte, Nebraska. And, you know, that deal, obviously we're not marketing it to like, we're realistically putting it probably in front of 10 to 15 very solid institutional level buyers who we know have the wherewithal to take it down. But yeah, I mean, each deal is different, which is what I think makes storage so exciting, because it's a business more than it's a piece of real estate. And so that's where the value is derived from.
So you've got those big institutional investors putting them in portfolios. Is this something that maybe it's somebody's first foray into real estate investing, or at least on the commercial side? Is this something that's kind of accessible to somebody who's kind of new to it? On paper, you know, it's like it probably like anything else. It looks simpler than it is. You know, you don't have buildings with HVAC or plumbing. You know, you got a roof, maybe some electrical outlets and locks, you know, and it looks really simple. But I'm sure there's people who get into it and they're like, oh my gosh, this is more work than I've ever done in my life. But on the whole, do you think that would be something for somebody's first maybe foray into real estate investing? Again, maybe on the commercial side, not necessarily comparing it to residential, but is it pretty accessible to that type of person?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's going to depend on the property. So if you're, you know, if you're an experienced operator, you know, you're an aggressive investor, typically you're going to be looking for the value add opportunities, you know, maybe low occupancy physically, maybe a high economic vacancy, maybe low on rents. There's a number of things where, you know, people see operational upside that makes them want to buy a facility. If you're somebody new, you know, there's definitely properties where it's a little bit of in between. It's not fully stabilized. It's not a full, you know, nightmare of a deal that you just see as a purely value add opportunity. But it's really to each their own. I mean, I've sold this year, I think like two of my deals were first time storage buyers. We actually just closed one up. We closed one up on Monday that was to a first time storage buyer. And so, I mean, I think it ultimately comes down to the deal itself, right? Like what are the numbers showing and is it a good deal? But yeah, I would say so. I mean, we always call them apartments without bathrooms, you know, it just makes everyone's life a lot easier. And there's typically very little turnover. A lot of times it depends on the unit sizes. So typically the smaller the unit size, the more turnover you can expect to have. But 10 by 10s are kind of the gold standard for the industry. Where I'm located in you know, tertiary markets in the Midwest, the gold standard is actually 10 by 20s because, you know, typically it's small business owners, people with equipment, but, you know, people who just have a lot of stuff that they want to store in a larger garage versus a small, you know, 10 by 10 or 10 or 5 by 10 unit.
And we should tell people, despite like some of the stereotypes you may see, these are not good units for pathetic single men to just set up a recliner and light only with a TV set where they can just live cheaply, are they?
No, unfortunately, you know, believe it or not, there are actually, there are some like self-storage-esque facilities where you can like buy a condo and use it as a man cave. I've seen that before. It's obviously very rare, but there's like luxury, you know, self-storage facilities. And I've always found those to be pretty funny.
That almost kind of crosses over to what I've seen with, places where guys have car collections and you know, can't put them all at the house. So, and a lot of those places are really furnished nicely inside, but imagine that's a little bit more to manage, when you've got, so much more going on there. So when I kind of think about like, storage, I, you know, and I was thinking about your market, Phoenix, the more I thought about it, I'm like, boy, that probably is a great market for storage facilities there, because you have a lot of people moving from other parts of the country, and they may be moving to a smaller house there and maybe putting a lot of stuff in storage, or it's somebody's second home that, you know, maybe they are storing a car there. Is there a typical Phoenix storage self-storage user, or is that fairly accurate? Does that lend itself pretty well to the storage market in Phoenix there?
Yeah. So, I mean, like I told you, you know, my main markets are the Midwest, so I'm not really on Phoenix self-storage all that much. But I will say, I mean, you know, versus Kansas City, which I'm fully aware, you know, I'm from there, we don't really have basements, you know, here in Phoenix. That's not very common that people have basements, which is like the number one place where people store things. So I've noticed that markets where the typical home isn't built with a basement tends to have, you know, a lot more storage inventory available. And so here in Phoenix, I know we have to be, gosh, one of the most saturated markets out there. I know it's actually gotten so bad that a lot of the operators here have gotten to the point where they not only haven't been able to raise rates, but some of them are having to drop rates this year.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, that's definitely concerning given the fact that we've had such high, you know, rent growth over the last, I'd say, 5-6 years. But I mean, in my markets, we're not really having as much of an issue with that. I mean, most of the rents are staying pretty steady. Some are still increasing rents. So there's that. But yeah, there's definitely a large amount of inventory for self-storage here in Phoenix. I know, I think, according to my partner, I think he said there's over 130 facilities in the Phoenix MSA alone. Mm. So yeah, I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah. I was in Phoenix just about a year ago, and it's a city that just sprawls and grows. I think it grew by 10,000 people just in the 4 days I was there. So yeah, it's a big growing city there. So outside of those markets, when you get into places like Wyoming, which is just the opposite, I think Phoenix probably has 10 times more people than the whole state of Wyoming, you know, do you get like, storage facilities that are more geared towards, you know, the guys, hunting vehicles, agricultural implements, things like that, or do you really get into what people put into them after you close the deal?
Yeah, it's not, I wouldn't say the facilities are necessarily tailored in that sense. What I will say is that I've noticed a lot of in typical tertiary markets, a very contractor or a very highly desirable unit is like a contractor base. So, you know, unit sizes 12 by 40, 20 by 40, 20 by 50, typically with electric, sometimes with, you know, a heater. And typically businesses are operated out of those. So a lot of times we'll see like auto body repair shops and, you know, landscaping services, really anything of that nature. But those are very desirable units that I don't really see in, you know, massive cities like I do in, you know, some of the smaller ones. So that's definitely interesting. And they can get pretty good rent per square foot on those as well.
As you were saying that, I was thinking, well, maybe a storage unit would be less expensive than something zoned for that initially. Sounds like the rent would be comparable after all is said and done.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly close. And the only other thing that's really nice about those is you can do two things. So if you build like a strip of shop condos, right? Sometimes we'll see owners sell those off as individual units. Other times we'll see them put them on leases. I recommend leases, obviously, because I think if you can sell the storage with the contractor bays, there's a lot of value in that versus just selling off the bays themselves. But you know, there's also the promise of rent growth down the road, et cetera.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, with the leases, typically we see a 12-month lease on those standard like multifamily, and people, we never hear issues. Every owner I've talked to who has contractor bays is usually 100% occupied. They love them. They want to build more. And they're very high in demand. So.
Well, want to go where the demand is for sure.
Right.
So we've talked a lot about the storage units specifically. And again, like I said, I'm pretty inexperienced in the world of commercial. Do you feel like you're so specialized in the storage realm that, you know, if somebody said, hey, Mason, I got an office building to list, you want to take it, you know, or would you be like, oh, no, I just do storage. I got to refer that. Have you been finding that a lot of the fundamentals in commercial real estate apply across different types of properties, or do you really feel like you got to stick with this niche you found here?
Yeah. So with regards to that question, I mean, so at Matthews, one of the biggest things they preach is, you know, be a specialist in what you do and be really good at what you do. And that's what makes you valuable more so than anything. And I couldn't agree with that sentiment more. So typically when that does happen, where something does come across my plate, you know, I don't care if it's, you know, a $500,000 office building or a $10 million, you know, car wash, I'm probably going to refer that out. And the reason why is because I think my time would be better spent working on my business and continuing to build relationships with owners and just specializing again in my market and my product type, than it would be sitting there trying to figure out, you know, how to evaluate a car wash and then, right, you know, potentially doing it wrong. And so typically what we do is we refer those out to each other, especially internally. And that, you know, it's nice because I can get 20% from, you know, a friend of mine who's in the office working on the deal, and I don't really have to put any effort into it per se outside of connecting them with the owner. And so if that does occur, then that's what I would do. But no, I prefer to just stick to storage. You know, I don't want to, we always say, you know, under promise, over deliver, right? So that's I don't want to do the opposite of that and tell somebody I can sell their car wash when, you know, obviously I don't, that's not what I'm.
Right. Well, how often does it come along where in commercial, I think this happens once in a while, is the actual whole business is being sold with the property. Maybe not as big a factor in self-storage, where there's maybe not as much, you know, there's like no restaurant equipment to sell or, you know, body shop tools to sell with it. But, obviously when somebody's buying an existing self-storage facility, they're probably wanting to see, you know, profits and losses just like any other business would. But do you sell the business assets along with that, or do you pretty much focus on the land, the structure type stuff?
Yeah, no, I mean, it all goes hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So depending on the purchase and sale agreement, there can be a lot of, it can definitely have an effect on the sale going through. So if you think about it in the way of assigning a price tag, because we have to assign price tags to the real estate and to the business. And in my opinion, you know, the real estate isn't really of value most of the time without the business. True. Obviously, unless, you know, you're located on the, you know, best corner lot in the city. But typically, at least for my case, that is not what happens. So, you know, let's say you've got a $17 million deal, right? You have to evaluate the real estate and the business separately so that when the new owner purchases the property, right, obviously taxes are going to be adjusted. And so, you know, you can basically say, well, we'll allocate $4 million to the business and we'll allocate $13 million to the real estate. And you might be thinking, well, that sounds great. But then what happens when the owner wants a 1031 exchange, you know, into other properties? It can cause issues. So a lot of times there's a big negotiation that happens, especially on bigger deals. I mean, we don't really, this isn't, you know, very common to deal with on smaller deals. But, you know, with bigger deals, there can be a lot of talks about that. But yeah, we certainly, I mean, we're valuating the real estate almost entirely on the business valuation, which is how much is the property generating in income? So that's definitely something we take into account.
Yeah. Well, after going over all of that, anything we haven't covered today that you kind of want to go over as far as storage units, commercial real estate, any of the markets you're in, anything like that, the we haven't gone over since I'm I think that was kind of a shotgun approach to it, but
it was just a conversation. It was definitely good.
I definitely learned something.
No, I would say, I mean, if you're listening to this and you have any interest in getting into storage, or maybe you own one and you're looking to, you know, get it off your hands, feel free to reach out to me. The best point of contact for me is my email, just because I can, you know, see it in front of me. And you can email me at mason.gates@matthews.com. And then if you do want to shoot me a call, you can reach me on my direct at 602-946-4856. But outside of that, just, you know, always looking to connect with owners and buyers, and constantly looking to grow the brand and continue slinging deals.
Cool. You got a big finish ahead of you for the end of this year, and optimistic about 2024?
I do. Fingers crossed. We've got a few in escrow. Hoping to get them across the finish line. Definitely would make me feel a lot better about this first year, you know. But yeah. I think we're going to get some good deals done, and you'll certainly be hearing about those. I'll make sure to fill you in on them. But
yeah, keep us posted. Yeah. No, since our, I think we've spoken once or twice prior to this, and I was just really impressed with what you told me and all the rapid growth you've had and what is, if I sound like I'm hesitating, it's like, ooh, do I tell him how inexperienced he is? But no, I think you've gotten off to a heck of a start. And yeah, if I'm buying a storage unit anywhere, I'm giving you a call, Mason. So
I appreciate that.
Of course. No. And I appreciate the time today. Like I said, I learned something. Commercial is not my world, and getting into something specific. I started writing down questions. I'm like, how many questions could I have about self-storage? But I had a few. So it's an interesting realm, and I appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us today, Mason. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the time and the opportunity to talk with you guys.
Sure. And hopefully we'll catch you when you're in Kansas City.
Yeah, for sure. I'll be there actually a few times over the course of the next couple months. So
great.
We'll definitely have to meet up at some point.
Sure thing. All right.
All right.
Thanks, Mason, and take care.
Thank you. Have a good one.